Amen. All right, well, Jim is away this week, so you get me. Yay. For those of you who don't know me, Pastor Jason, one of the associate pastors here, and I love it when I get an opportunity to speak. It is such a blessing to me. It's a blessing to just be able to share God's word. It's one of those things that, you know, when you do something and you feel great about it afterwards, you know is what you were meant to do. I just love it. So, what I want to talk about today is God's plan. God has a plan for each and every one of us. God reminded me of that just this morning. I don't believe in fate or it just happened by chance or whatever. I am a huge believer in God has a plan for each and every one of us. And your plan unfolds day by day, hour by hour, minute by minute. The people he puts in your way, the job that you hold, your family, your friends, the city you live in, everything. It's all part of it. And just this morning, God reminded me that he put me here this morning for a reason. And it was an amazing experience. And I don't even know how to explain it. It was just amazing. It's not coincidence. It's just part of a grand plan that we'll never know what it all ends up to be until we're sitting in heaven and we can see the beginning to the end. And we sit there with him and we can see it all. But I think it's fun to sometimes look back and think about the good, the bad, the ugly, the sickness, the happiness, the everyday mundaneness, just how that plan unfolds. And I was even reminded of that last week when Jim ended the service with a very familiar set of verses that a lot of people know, Jeremiah 29:11-14. For I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord, plans to prosper you, plans to give you a hope and a future. And I sat back there in that sound booth, and I got excited. Because I already knew what I was going to be talking about this week. And it's not Jeremiah 29:11. But I knew that there was part of that chapter that I just wanted to pull a little snippet out of. And it was just exciting to see how he threw that up there, Jeremiah 29:11-14. And I knew that I was going to go right back and we're going to pick up right where we left off, except for we're going to jump a few verses ahead of that. In Jeremiah 29:4-11. Tracy could put it up there on the screen for you if you don't have it. In verse 4 it says this. This is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says to all those I carried into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. Build houses, settle down, plant gardens, and eat what they produce. Marry and have sons and daughters. Find wives for your sons, and give your daughters away in marriage, so that they too may have sons and daughters. Increase in number there, do not decrease. Also seek the peace and prosperity of that city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you will prosper. Yes, this is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says. Do not let the prophets and the diviners among you deceive you. Do not listen to the dreams encourage them to have. They are prophesying lies to you in my name. I have not sent them, declares the Lord. And what he's trying to get at there is the prophet Jeremiah is telling the exiles, you're there. For lack of better words, suck it up. I've put you there. I want you to do something for me. And when you do that something for me, I'm going to prosper you. And I'm going to make you a great nation. And then he goes on further and he talks about, I know the plans I have for you. We don't know the plan that God has for us, but he does. He knows the plan that he has for us. Essentially, he's telling them, you are now going to be strangers in a strange land. But the good thing about God is he doesn't leave them hanging. He talks about those verses. I'm going to give you a hope and a future. And even long before that, God had promised the nation of Israel in Deuteronomy 31:6, he said, I will never leave you or forsake you. He promised them a long, long, long time ago, long before they went into exile, when they were taken captives by the Babylonians, and then they were ruled over by the Assyrians, and then they were ruled over by the people we're going to talk about today, the Persians. Long before all that happened, he said, I will never leave you, and I will never forsake you. So says the Lord. So I have a question for you guys. Talking about exiling and being gone. How many of you were born and raised right here in Colorado Springs? A third of you, maybe? How many of you were born in the mountain time zone? We'll just go there. A few more of you, okay. How many of you were raised in the United States? Most of you, but not all of you. I'm not going to call you out because I don't want to embarrass you. How many of you were raised outside the United States? God has a plan for you. He brought you here. He raised you there. He brought you here for a purpose. So where are we headed with all this? Jason, you are all over the map. Literally. Talked about Babylon. We talked about Colorado Springs. Where are we headed with all this, right? All right. So here we go. So my first point that I want to make is most of us are not native to where we currently reside. I didn't grow up here. I grew up in a little town in upstate New York. I'm not even joking. We struggled to have 500 people within the township. That's how small it was. I grew up with cows, tractors, farmers, snowmobiles, ATVs, dirt bikes in the country. I definitely did not grow up in the city, but God had a plan for me. He took me out of that place, and he took me to beautiful Hawaii, where Stephanie's from. And he had a plan for me there. And then he picked me up from there, and he took me to Tennessee, and then he picked me up from there, and he took me back to New York, and then he picked me up from there, and he threw me here in Colorado, and here I am. But I look back at that plan, and I'm amazed at how he used each little thing in my life, growing up in a rural area, going to Hawaii, living in paradise, going to be from there to one of the most deployed divisions in the Army, in the 101st, going from there and being a recruiter, going from there and coming here to Fort Carson. And I promised my wife I wouldn't talk about the Army, but for some reason it always just comes up. Fort Carson, then spending time 15 months in Baghdad and seeing living with Iraqis. I was part of a 10-man team that was assigned to an Iraqi Army unit, and we were literally the only Americans. So I lived in the Iraqi culture for 15 months. Went to North Carolina, came back, went to Afghanistan, came back. God said, you're done. And I said, thank you. And my wife said, what? I thought we were going to retire. God had another plan for me, though. So, all that being said, let's get to where we're going. This morning, I was up here with the band, and we were talking, and Dave's like, what are you going to be talking about this morning? Better not be one of those girly books. And I said, well, Dave, actually it is. So turn with me, if you will, to the book of Esther. It's not too often that I've seen. You see a man, a pastor, speaking from the book of Esther. A lot of people see it as one of those, you know, girly books. But let me tell you something, men, before you get up and leave. This message isn't for the women exclusively. It's for all of us. And I'll tell you from reading and studying Esther, if you take some time and you read through the chapters of Esther and you study it, you actually read and see what's going on in there, it's definitely not a girly book. There's so much going on in there that applies to both strong women and strong men who are called to lead their households and how they can influence those that are under them. So I want to give you a little backstory, since we're not going to be starting right in chapter 1. Chapter 1, to set the scene, we're in the Empire of Persia, in the city of Susa, where the citadel is, where it's actually the winter haven for the Persian Empire, where they spend their winters. And we have a king named Xerxes. And the name might start to sound familiar if you've ever seen the movie 300, but I'm pretty sure that's not how it actually went down. But there was actually a man named Xerxes. He was the ruler of the Persian Empire at one time, and he was known for having just a thirst and a love to party, but he was also known for his harshness and his cruelty. So in chapter 1, we see Xerxes, he's having a party, and it's a big party. It's like a six-month party. And about 7 days in, he decides, hey, I want to parade my wife in front of all my friends because she's beautiful. So he brings in the queen, or he tries to bring in the queen, rather, and she says, not happening, bud. You're not parading me around. Not happening. So, of course, this makes him angry. Talks to all his cronies, and they say, well, we can't have this. We can't have a woman telling her husband no. Because once that word gets out, then all the women and all the whole empire are going to just tell their husbands no. I'm not going to do that. So he listens to his counsel, and he says, yeah, that's probably a good idea. And he gives old Queen Vashanti the boot, for lack of better. You know, that's the short version. Gives her the boot, says, see you later, goes on partying. So then we get into chapter 2. And he goes, man, I really miss that girl. I'm lonely now. So he goes back to these same advisors that said, get rid of her. And he says, well, what am I going to do now? And they say, for lack of, you know, for better terms, he says, they tell him, let's have a beauty contest. Let's bring in all the beautiful women from the entire empire, and we'll give them all to you, and you can choose a queen from all of them. So part of that was, in that chapter 2, we start setting the scene and we start learning about a Jew named Mordecai. And Mordecai happens to have, Mordecai most likely was a descendant. His parents probably were some of the people that got exiled when King Nebuchadnezzar came through and took the Babylonian Empire, took over. And so it was probably fresh in his mind about things that were going on back then. He probably heard stories from his parents about how they had at one time lived in the nation of Israel, and then they were taken into exile into Babylon. But more importantly, Mordecai had a cousin. And Mordecai's cousin was an orphan. So Mordecai took charge of this young lady. Her name was Hadassah. And he raised her up as her own, and he raised her up under his roof. And her beauty was very great. Scripture says she was very beautiful, and it also said she had a pleasing body as well. So not only was she pretty, she had a nice body. So she was one of these beautiful women. Her name was Esther. Hadassah is Esther. She was given, you know, it's very common back then when they were taken into captivity that they would have a Hebrew name and then also a name of whatever the nation was that was ruling over them at the time. So Esther is taken away to the king. And she is given beauty treatments and all these things, and she's given handmaidens and all these things. And then we get into chapter 3, enter the villain. Because no good story can be a good story without having a villain, right? So in enters a man named Haman. And Haman was elevated above all the other nobles to basically second in command. And Haman was not a nice guy. Haman was the guy who had a lot of pride, who wanted everyone that he saw to bow before him. And so much so that the king actually made that a law, that everyone that passed through Haman's path had to bow before Haman, except for this one guy. This one guy, Mordecai, said, no, I will not bow before you. And it could have been for a number of reasons. It could have been he had a bad attitude too. It could have been a religious thing. Could have been anything. But basically, what it boils down to is Mordecai refused to bow down and show honor to Haman. So instead of taking his anger and his fury, because this made Haman so mad. How many of you grew up with VeggieTales? How many of you saw the story of Esther? How many of you saw when Mr. Lunt, who was Haman, got so angry? He got so angry. That's what I picture in my mind because I got kids that watch VeggieTales. So I picture Haman as this gourd getting really angry. So Haman gets really angry, and rather than taking it out on Mordecai, he decides, that's it. I'm getting rid of all of you. No more Jews. So he goes and he talks to King Xerxes because he had such great influence with him. He was second in command. And he basically convinces Xerxes that these Jews are bad for our empire. They don't listen to us. They don't obey our laws. They don't worship our gods. They don't do anything that we want to do or that we say you should do. They're disrespectful. So let's just wipe them out. Let's get rid of them. So Xerxes is like, yeah, that makes sense. If they're not going to follow our laws, let's get rid of them. So Xerxes makes a law and declares that on a certain day and a certain month, that they, all the Jews in the entire empire, which spanned from the Hindu Kush Mountains, which is on the border of Pakistan and Afghanistan, all the way to the Mediterranean Sea. So that's a huge empire. That's a lot of people to kill. A lot of people to knock off. Today, let's reel it back a little bit and think about today, think about our own lives. Many of us have a Haman in our lives. Now, he may not want to kill us, but he may be that person or she may be that person who just lords over our lives and just wants you to do everything, wants you to bow down before them, wants you to do what they want to do, wants you to do all these things. And if you don't do these things, woe is you, because I'm going to take it out on you. But I want to tell you again, where God has you is not by accident. If God has you underneath a Haman, it's not by accident. It may be hard. It may be a struggle to deal with. And in the past, I was in the army, I had a lot of Hamans that I had to deal with. But they all did something for me, and God brought me through each and every one of those in a better way now. So that gets us all the way to Esther 4. So now that you're all caught up on what's going on, we're going to focus on Esther chapter 4. So verse 1 says this. When Mordecai learned of all that had been done, he tore his clothes, he put on sackcloth and ashes, and he went out into the city wailing loudly and bitterly. But he went only as far as the king's gate, because no one clothed in sackcloth was allowed to enter into it. In every province to which the edict and the order of the king came, there was great mourning among the Jews with fasting and weeping and wailing. Many lay in sackcloth and ashes. When Esther's eunuchs, a female and female attendants, came and told her about Mordecai, she was in great distress. She sent clothes for him, put on him instead of the sackcloth, but he would not accept them. And then Esther summoned Hathach. That's one of those names. Jim talked about that last week. Man, those names, they get you every time. So she summoned him, and she said, one of the assigned her as an attendant and ordered him to go find out what was troubling Mordecai and why. So, like I said, Mordecai was probably a really early descendant of those who had been exiled with the original exile from into Babylon and stuff like that. And so he remembers, he hasn't lost touch with his roots, his heritage. And part of the heritage of the nation of Israel is when there is something so horrible that happens in your life that you clothe yourself in sackcloth and ashes and you actually mourn for it. So Mordecai did this. And he is so distraught because he has found out that everyone that he knows, everyone that he holds dear, everyone in his family, all his friends, they're all going to die. And it's not even that they're going to die. They know the day they're going to die because they put in the edict, the exact month and the day that this would be carried out. So they have a death sentence that they know is coming. How horrible would that be? And all this happened because Mordecai, who I'm sure now is feeling the weight of a nation on his shoulders, refused to simply bow to a man in power. So now Mordecai is at the gate, and he's crying, and he's mourning, but not just that. He's got the weight of a nation on his shoulders because of his actions. Have you ever been so stubborn? So stubborn that you caused yourself unneeded stress? Have you ever been so stubborn that you caused stress in your marriage, your life, your relationship with a boyfriend or girlfriend, school, whatever? Have you ever been just so stubborn? My wife will tell you I am stubborn. I am stubborn like a mule sometimes when it comes to certain things. Part of that probably is because when I was in the Army, things are pretty black and white, and when it's black and white, that's how it goes, and you just do what you're supposed to do to get the job done, and you just do it. And then when things kind of come in there and change things up a little bit, you're like, no, this is how it's got to be done. But stubbornness sometimes can lead to a world of hurt and a world of pain and a world of stress that you have no clue what could happen. Let's take that one step further. Has God ever asked you to do something and you refuse to do it? Have you ever been so stubborn in your walk with God and said, no, I'm just not going to do it. Not happening. I'm not called to go talk to that person on the street, even though God is saying, go do it. Come on, come on. And you know you hear that still small voice, and except it's not still and small anymore. It's getting loud. And God's saying, you need to go talk to that person. Or you need to invite that person, or you need to do whatever it is. I need you to do this. And you just turn around and do a 180 and you decide, I'm not doing it. I tell you what, when you do that, you miss out 99.9999 whatever percent. I'll just say 100% of the time, you missed out on a blessing. And sometimes it's too late to turn back and fix it. Don't let it be too late. In Mordecai's case, it was too late. So Haman's plot to destroy the Jews unfolds. And Mordecai hears about this and he becomes distraught. And he knows that what he did is going to affect everyone. And it's such a horrible weight to bear. Mordecai pushed it too far. His pride got in the way of what was best. But not only that, think about the fear that Mordecai must have as well. Mordecai was crippled with fear that came from Haman's burning anger. Fear is disabling. Fear turns everything upside down. But I want to remind you that fear is not from the Lord. And that's point number two. Fear is from the enemy. And the enemy uses it to throw you off your game. But if you're strong in the Lord, and you're walking with the Lord, and you have a relationship with the Lord, and you're talking with the Lord, and you're doing the things that Jim so often reminds us of, you know, you're in the Word, you're praying, you're fellowshipping, you're doing the things that you've been called to do, you can overcome. You can overcome that fear. So let's see what happens. In verse 6, so Esther sends out Hathach, and he says, went out to Mordecai, and in the open square of the city in front of the king's gate, Mordecai told him everything that had happened. Because at this point, Esther is clueless. She doesn't know. Actually, it was illegal to go and just hang out with the king. You couldn't just go talk to the king. So Esther had no clue at this point what was going on. So Mordecai tells him everything that had happened, including the exact amount of money Haman had promised to pay into the royal treasury for the destruction of the Jews. He also gave him a copy of the text of the edict for their annihilation, for which had been published in Susa, to show Esther and explain it to her, and told him to instruct her to go into the king's presence and beg for mercy and plead with him for her people. So he went back and he reported to Esther what Mordecai had said, and then she instructed him to say to Mordecai, all the king's officials and the people in the royal provinces know that for any man or woman who approaches the king in the inner court without being summoned, the king has but one law, and that is that they be put to death unless the king extends his golden scepter to them and spares their lives. But 30 days have passed since I was called to go to the king. So she says, I don't know what's going on, but if I go in there unannounced, I could be dead. So what you're asking me to do is basically write my own death sentence for you. Because if the king was having a bad day, if someone didn't cook his eggs right that morning, if the jester wasn't funny that day, if something happened and the king was upset and Esther walks into the court uninvited, that's it. And he'd already gotten rid of one queen. What's stopping him from getting rid of another, right? So she's saying, I am going to take a big risk in doing this. I didn't read it specifically in the last few chapters, but the amount of silver that Haman promised the king was equivalent to 2/3 of the annual income of the entire empire. He promised him 10,000 talents of silver, which is the equivalent today of about 60 tons of silver, which you can imagine is quite a sum of money. And it's surmised that Haman assumed that once he killed all the Jews, they were going to ransack and pillage, and he would be able to come up with all that money, and that's how he was going to pay the king. Haman didn't actually have 60 tons of silver just hanging out, but he was going to collect it from those that he killed. So Mordecai says, go to the king and beg for mercy. Mordecai can't do it himself because he's all sackcloth and ashes. Nor is there any chance that he would even get that close or have an opportunity to speak to the king. But Esther, who has favor with the king and who was raised up in Mordecai's house, now he's got an in. So he says to Esther, go and talk to the king. You got to save us. Our hope is now, our lives basically are in your hands. Being her father-like figure, he had a lot of influence with her. But, like I said, if she went in there and he was having a bad day, that was the end of it all. But then again, I think about it, and what did Esther have to lose? Esther had nothing to lose. Esther was a Jew. The king didn't know she was a Jew at this point, but Esther was a Jew. And had this plan come to fruition, regardless of if she went and talked to the king and died then, or if she died later, she was going to die because of her heritage and her upbringing. She was a Jew. She was done. So she had nothing to lose. But still, she was a little hesitant. And we've gone back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Have you ever had one of those text message conversations where you're going back and forth, back and forth? Sometimes when I go to the store, I forget my list. Actually, most of the times, I forget my list. And it actually happened to me last night. I went to the store, had the list in hand, got out of the car, got into the store, and went, text Jerry, I don't got my list. So she texts me back, this is what you need to get. Okay, are you sure there's nothing else? And you're going back and forth. So this was like long before text messages, but this is basically what they're doing. Esther's sending her person out. He's saying something to Mordecai. Mordecai's saying something to her. She's saying something to him. They're going back and forth, 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 right? And finally, Esther says, all right, I'll do it. So let's read on verse 12. When Esther's words were reported to Mordecai, he sent her back an answer. Do not think because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place. But you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this. Then Esther sent a reply to Mordecai, go gather together all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my attendants will fast as you do, and when this is done, I will go before the king, even though it is against the law, and if I perish, I perish. So Mordecai went away and carried this out as she had requested. So like I said, they're going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and finally Esther says, all right, I'll do it. But you got to do something for me. I need you to gather up all our people, and I need you guys to fast. And it doesn't say it specifically, but I need you guys to pray that I would be shown favor and that I'm not going to get knocked off when I go see the king. Verse 12 is very much a father speaking to his daughter. And he's providing her some very stern advice. And sometimes advice from the father or our father is very stern and very direct. And we know exactly what he's saying. And it's not nice, but we know we got to do it. Verse 12, he says, do not think that because you're in the king's household that you will escape this. He's telling her, if you don't do this, you're going to die too. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place. From another place was actually a Jewish terminology back in that time to reference God. And I don't know if you've ever read through the whole book of Esther, there's actually no mention of the name God or Yahweh. Not even one mention of it. But is it alluded to very specifically, especially in instances like this? From another place at that time in Jewish culture was actually another way of saying Yahweh or God. So what Mordecai is telling her, if you don't do this, there's a good chance we're all going to die. But even more so, even if we don't all die, you're going to die. And your family's going to die. But God and his plan will not be thwarted. God will not allow us to be eliminated. God's plan will be carried out in your life, regardless of your circumstances, regardless of what you refuse to do, or regardless of what you do, he is going to put someone or something in that place that you refuse to do, and his plan is going to be carried out. And that's basically what Mordecai is telling her. Don't think that you're going to escape. Don't think that God's plan is not going to be carried out. Don't think that God doesn't have a plan for you. Because he's got a plan for everyone. He's got a plan for the carpenter, the electrician, the IT nerd. He's got a plan for the soldier. He's got a plan for the wife. He's got a plan for the teenager. He's got a plan for everybody. And he's got you where he's got you when he's got you for a reason. So to sum up this chapter in the Cliff Notes, I said it before, I'm going to say it again. Deliverance will come. Deliverance is going to come for the nation of Israel, regardless of if Esther is willing to do it or not. But he points out, if you're disobedient and you don't do this, your lineage is going to be cut off. Your line is going to be done. Your family will be gone. Today we celebrated communion. And to bring this all kind of full circle, in talking about God's will for you and God's plan for you and all this stuff, and where he has you, where he has you for a reason, I was reminded of a verse in Matthew when Jesus had gathered the disciples and they were having the Last Supper together. And he actually said this in chapter 26, verse 23. He said, Jesus replied, "The one who has dipped his hand into the bowl with me will betray me. And the Son of Man will go just as it is written about him. But woe to the man who betrays the Son of Man. It would be better to him if he had not been born." And I bring that verse up only to highlight the fact that if you are a Christian, let's just put it bluntly, if you're a Christian and you know that you have something to do, you know that you're supposed to shake hands at the front door, you know that you're supposed to play the piano, you know that you're supposed to go talk to that guy in the street. You know that you're supposed to talk to that guy at work or gal. Woe to you, and I'm telling you this right now, woe to you if you disregard your calling. Woe to you if you ignore the plan that God has for you. And I'm only telling this not only as just a warning, but tell you, oh my word, are you going to miss out on a blessing? Oh my word, are you going to miss out on a blessing if you just sit down and pray with somebody? Someone hurting at school. It's pretty obvious usually. You can usually see them. People who are hurting, it's written all over them. People who need Jesus, it's written all over them. woe to you if you decide, not me, God, not me, Lord. That's not my job. I wasn't called to be the pastor. I wasn't called to be the evangelist. I wasn't called to be the missionary. I wasn't called to do... The people that God puts in your life are the people that you were called to. That's your mission field. That's God's plan for you at that moment. He may have grander plans for you. He may not. But those people that he put in front of you, that's his plan for you at that moment. So to sum it all up, say it again. God is going to deliver his people. God will deliver his people either behind the scenes or front and center, but God's going to deliver his people. God's plans cannot be thwarted. God's plans cannot be stopped. God has a plan from beginning to end. But so does the devil. So does the enemy. He definitely has an agenda, and he definitely has a plan. And the annihilation of the Jewish nation was part of his plan. Satan, no doubt, influenced Haman to the point where he would wipe out the entire Jewish nation. Because at that time, all of Israel was encompassed by the nation, or by the empire of Persia. So had Haman's plans come to fruition, let's just say they came to fruition, where would you be right now? Had Haman's plans come to fruition, the line of David would have been cut, which means there would have been no Jesus, no apostles, no Paul to go to the nations, to the Greeks, no Paul and Peter to spread the church worldwide. Had Satan's plans, let's just say, if it had happened, we would not be here today. Except God's plans can't be stopped. God will always raise up another person if you are not willing. So I just encourage you this morning to be willing. The last thing I want to remind you of is in Hebrews 6, verses 10 through 11, it says, God is not unjust, and he will not forget your work and your love you have shown him as you have helped his people and continue to help them. We want each of you to show the same diligence to the very end so that what you hope for may be fully realized. God will not forget the work you have done. However big or small, God will not forget the work you have done. And right before service, this one last verse came to mind. And I hope it sums up my point. My point that we've all been called, we've been all called to share our faith. Our faith is not something like fine china. Stick with me on this. It's not like fine china. Our faith in the Lord and our salvation is not something that you stick up in an old cabinet and let it get dusty and let it just sit until the fancy guests show up. Our faith is like those dishes at Walmart that you can get a whole package of them for $5. And if they break, who cares? I'll go back to Walmart and get some more. When you share your faith, you might get broken a little bit. That's all right. Walmart makes more every day. And I'm not talking about faith. I'm talking about plates. But God every day will give you a new measure of faith if you just ask him for it. You may be beat down. You may be broken. Your interaction may not have gone just how you wanted it to go. That's all right. Every day, God has a new plan for you. But in Romans 10, it says this, how can they call on the one they have not believed in, and how can they believe in the one of whom they have not heard? And how can they hear without someone to preach it to them? That's you. When you go out those doors today, there's a sign, and we said it over and over again. But when you go out those doors and you go out that driveway, if you look just off to your right, and you got to anyways because you got to make sure someone doesn't blindside you, look off to the right, there's a sign right there that says, "Welcome to the mission field. Go." Will you stand with me? Father, thank you for what you have done in our lives, and thank you. I just want to personally thank you for not letting me see all of the plan because I will screw it up. But thank you for the plan that you have for us. Each and every one of us have been called to a specific place, to a specific time, with a specific set of people to influence. Our influence, whether we know it or not, is great. And Lord, it can be even greater if we just call on you and just ask you what you would have us to do.